I'm Dan Carell with DCA Card Links, and this is Commerce Code, a bi-weekly digital commerce podcast for leaders in card linking, loyalty and digital marketing, mobile wallets and payments, and financial data. Thanks for joining this running conversation with leaders in the industry. And if this podcast is helpful to you, come join us at a DCA Card Links event. You can learn more at www.digcomall.org. We've got a great episode ahead today, and we're in the world of travel. Whenever I think of travel, and in particular the business of travel, I think, oh, I should go back and look at that TSA daily passenger data that I love so much. I'm a nerd. I'm a data nerd. I'm a nerd for other things too. But I will say, if you're also a data nerd and maybe that's interested in travel, just Google TSA daily passenger data sometime. It'll get you there very quickly. TSA in the United States publishes just a number, just a single number for each day of the year. It usually runs 2 or 3 days behind, which is like lightning fast for the government. So as I sit here in late February, I'm able to report on the first 90 days of 2025. And of course, I scraped the data for this year and for the last 7 years. And then I said, hey, let's take a look at where things stand pre and post COVID and how the recovery is going. Because TSA is simply telling us, hey, how many human beings did we have go through a scanner on this day? So you can imagine, you know, very precise. That's what the data is. There's some limitations to it, but it tells you something, right? And it's apples to apples. So here's where we're at. In 2019 and in 2020, for the first 90 days of the year, we had about 2.1 million people per day on average. And the biggest day for the first 90 days of the year was 2.6 million in 2019, 2.5 million in 2020. So that's kind of like the range. By the way, 2020 was January and the first half of February, so we were still in business. Shift to 2021, just for reference, the average day in the first 90 days was 809,000. So it was a drop of about 60% from what we had before. 2022, we climbed to 1.5 million. Again, the target from before was 2.1 million. 2023, we're up to 1.9, actually almost 2 million. 2024, last year, the first 90 days, were just 2.1 million, almost precisely what we'd had back in 2019. And then 2025, so the first 90 days of this year, not massively higher, but 2.14 million. So just like a shade higher, and the biggest first 90 days in history. 2019 had been the biggest travel year in history up to that point. Last thing I'll say is I also looked at, you know, I looked at a bunch of different data because I'm a nerd, but I looked at what was the biggest day of the first 90. The biggest day of the first 90 days of 2025 was 2.7 million. And that's 100,000, a little more than 100,000 more than what we saw in 2019. Okay. That's a slightly long way of saying the travel game, as tested by just a raw benchmark of how many people are in airports going somewhere, is fully back and it's continuing to grow. And arguably, the biggest days are a wee bit bigger than ever. So we're continuing that growth pattern of having to expand our capability and capacities. And that is everything from infrastructure to what we're going to talk about today with John Taylor Garner, loyalty and awards systems and et cetera, software. So looking forward to that conversation and just wanted to get a little bit of a statistical hit in before we started. Commerce Code is brought to you in part by VantageScore. 8 of the top 10 banks and over 3,400 leading banks and fintechs use VantageScore to predict and manage repayment risk. Learn more about the latest advances in credit scoring and how to grow your lending business by leveraging financial inclusion at VantageScore.com. Welcome to Commerce Code. Today, we're joined by John Taylor Garner, the CEO and co-founder of Odyn. That's O-D-Y-N-N, and it's at Odyn.com. And Odyn has built the Awayz platform, that's A-W-A-Y-Z, or Z, if you're listening to us from somewhere other than the United States, platform. And Awayz creates the ability for customers to book hotels and flights with side-by-side points miles and cash pricing. There's more going on there than just that, but that gives you an idea of the conversation that we're leaning into. John, thanks so much for joining us on Commerce Code.
Thank you for having me. Happy to be here.
Great. Well, let me start with this. As we record this, we are a little more than 90 days into 2025. What is the coolest thing that you've done so far this year?
Well, I was on my honeymoon in Bali over the holidays, and that went well into 2025. I got back, I think, on the 17th of January.
The best imaginable answer, and I had no idea that the answer was going to be so cool. That's terrific. And boy, and it leans right into where we're headed with the conversation. So congratulations, number one. And then number two, John, we're in the world of travel, loyalty, and awards. You guys are innovators in that space. And I think a lot has changed in that world. And I just want to talk about those changes as we start. So I mentioned in the intro to this this episode that travel volumes have been, you know, level and rising really since 2023, hitting some new daily records in terms of number of travelers in the air anyway. So that's good. There's been a ton of change that has kind of come along with that. And so I wanted to get your perspective as a leader in this space as to, you know, what changed about travel loyalty, maybe during and then after COVID, and how has it continued to change?
So we all know that people stopped traveling during COVID due to the travel restrictions, and this had massive negative ramifications for the airline and hotel industry, obviously. Their revenues were slashed to, you know, pennies on the dollar, basically. So to stay afloat, obviously, they were given subsidies and some bailouts from the government, but they also had to leverage their assets. And the only things that were of value at the time were their loyalty programs. And so to leverage your loyalty program, you can do one thing, and that's sell loyalty, sell points and miles. And so they sold billions and billions of dollars worth of points and miles to their partners, the banks, because they issue co-branded credit cards, or they have transferable program partnerships where you can, you know, transfer from an Amex card to Delta, for example. And so the banks bought billions of dollars of these points and miles, not because they're doing it out of the kindness of their heart. They're doing it because they were getting a seat discount on them too. Let's face it, they weren't selling them for face value. But this allowed the airlines and hotels to stay afloat. The airlines and hotels also were extending loyalty and status to their members throughout COVID. So if anyone's listening had, you know, status on an airline or hotel, you were just automatically renewed for that same level of status without having to do anything. And this went on for a couple of years as well, actually. Now, during COVID, this was all fine because nobody was traveling, right? So nobody really knew what was happening or any of this stuff. But it all kind of came to a head once people started to travel again, because they didn't realize that, wait, everybody now has top tier status. Why am I no longer being upgraded? Or why am I not getting the same perks I was getting? Or the lounges are too crowded. The list goes on. So those are the real ramifications from a traveler standpoint. But from a loyalty program member standpoint, the airlines and hotels also changed the rules of how points and miles work. And all this happened while nobody was paying attention. So a post-COVID world is very different today.
I mean, there's a more or less straight line between, you know, I just think of it like monetary policy, right? So there's this issuance of a lot of, I mean, it's more complicated than that, but there's this issuance of currency that takes place. And then, you know, which is, and there's a more or less straight line. I mean, I was amazed at, I think I was recently notified of that I kept a status that I can't forget, remember which one it is, that I was not at all expecting to keep, right? With, I think, an airline. And it's 2025. So that's interesting. But the more or less straight line between that issuance of currency and, you know, the crowded airline lounges and all the other stuff that we've noticed. But then, of course, you know, the value of the currency is determined much more, right, in this case, by the travel industry. And I know that sort of deciphering or understanding, creating transparency around that, as I understand it, is part of what you guys are doing at Odin. Is that right?
Yes, that's exactly right. Anyone that took Econ 101 understands the macroeconomic policy of a central bank, right? If a central bank goes burr, as in prints a bunch of money, you're going to get hyperinflation, right? That's effectively what the airlines and hotels did during COVID. They sold a whole bunch of points and miles. They flooded the market with their currency. And so as a result, there's a lot more currency floating around. And during COVID and pre-COVID, the way that loyalty programs worked is their pricing was fixed. It was static. They published these things called award charts. And that was the price of a trip. So you can fly anywhere from North America to anywhere in Europe, round trip and economy for 60,000 miles pre-COVID. Just on American, Delta, United, didn't matter who you're flying, that was the cost. Now in a post-COVID world, it could be 60,000 miles, could be 30 if it's a sale, or it could be a million or anywhere in between. So it's fully dynamic. They chuck the charts out. Why? Because, you know, at a certain point, you can't keep pegging your currency. Again, going back to the macroeconomic analogy here, in keep repegging your currency. At a certain point, you just let it float. And so that's, in effect, what they've done. They just let it float.
It's interesting that they had the charts to be, like, ever, basically, because, you know, since deregulation, the actual pricing right, for tickets has been variable and really more sophisticated over time in terms of how variable it is. But they stuck with this, you know, and we all used to play the game and you'd be like, oh, that's a really good deal on points, but not so much for, you know. So what I think you're saying is it roughly, or maybe precisely, I don't know, the points and the money are like lining up a little more, or the points are variable the same way the money is.
Yes and no. Okay. So a handful have moved towards a cash-based loyalty currency. So they are literally pegged to a dollar fixed price. So then that allows it to float perfectly with the dollar pricing on the tickets. But most are still range-bound, and so they don't perfectly match. So there's still plenty of arbitrage opportunities, which is where we come in, right? Because now things are even more blurry. The pricing is even less, clear to people. Because the only way that you're going to figure out the price of something is you have to go through research. Before, you never had to, right? You just go to the war chart, like, oh, that's what the price is for any of those tickets. And so the airlines are moving towards that, but a lot of them, the vast majority of them, are never going to truly peg their miles price to a dollar price, because then at that point, they're just giving cash back. No right. difference.
Right.
And the reason why that they've stuck to these war charts goes back to why loyalty was invented in the first place. So just a quick history detour. American Airlines invented airline loyalty in 1980, and it's been the same ever since, right up until 2021, which was mid-COVID, when they switched to dynamic loyalty pricing. And so this was the same way for literally 40 plus years with how they operated with these static charts. So it's been evolving rapidly ever since 2021. But the reason why they're never going to move towards a fully cashback program is because it completely, ruins the concept of a mile, right? When an airline's giving you a mile, they're not giving you cash back. They're giving you an idea, a dream, an aspiration that you can fly somewhere in first class, that you can stay in an overwater bungalow on like crystal clear blue waters, that you can like do something that you not otherwise would, that you can treat yourself. Because the average person is never going to buy a first class ticket somewhere, right? But if you have a bunch of miles they weren't going to use anyways, you're like, oh, you know what? I'll treat myself. Yeah. That's what they're selling with these miles, right? And as soon as they go to a cashback currency, that dream, that aspiration is dead.
Yeah, that makes total sense, right? There has to be something special in it. There has to be some sparkle for the thing to work. So, and it's a terrific point. I think that, in some ways, like the psychology of that can kind of get washed away in the conversation where people don't examine, people have a tendency to talk about things, lots of things, not just this, as if we're all rational. And then they just go and turn around and behave the way humans behave. And there are gaps there, right? And there's only so many, but there are important gaps there between, quote unquote, what we think is rational or whatever you want to call it. Okay, well, that's a terrific account, by the way. And I got to say, like, if I knew, I guess I'd forgotten maybe that American Airlines had kind of initiated this. I know that they, created what became Sabre, and that became its own travel reservations thing. That was a pretty innovative and key thing as well. So I want to just talk briefly about, because I think we could talk all day and we won't, but the listeners to Commerce Code are in the weeds often, or like, able to understand all this stuff. And so I wonder if you have some thoughts about the tech and maybe like what changes in tech have happened in the last few years that matter for this, or maybe like the important things our audience should be aware of.
The tech that underlies all this is basically as dated as loyalty programs themselves. So everyone thinks that the airline industry hasn't innovated much in the last 40 years, and that's true. They haven't. But let me tell you, loyalty programs themselves are even way worse than the airline programs in terms of innovation and pushing new things. But so much has come to market in the buzzwords, Gen AI, machine learning, natural language processing. All these things are coming to fruition, basically allow companies, institutions to hyper-personalize their targeting to acquire new customers, to retain customers, to drive spend, to really hone in and lock them in. And we're just starting to see that being applied to loyalty. Because as we mentioned before, at the beginning of this chat, people get the same thing for any status, right? If you are a Delta Diamond member, right, you're going to get the exact same thing as every other Delta Diamond member. But not all Delta Diamond members are created equal. Everyone's different. Everyone wants different things. You're flying out of different airports. You're flying into different airports. Yeah. You travel with your significant others or your kids, or you travel for work. And none of this is segmented, or they're not discriminating. And by that, I'm not saying that in a negative way. They're not like price discriminating on the status for individuals. And you're just starting to see that. And it's starting to be unlocked with and combined with credit cards. So you can now, as of this was only like a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, you can now earn top status on most major airlines in the U.S. by never setting foot on a plane. Simply by spending on a credit card, you can earn top tier status. And you can actually even earn special invite status. I'm talking like Delta 360 or Concierge Key for those that have seen Up in the Air, or like Global Services on United, simply by spending on these cards. And that's allowing them to start to disintermediate these systems and give better targeted offers to lock in these customers. And it's, you know, very early days where we're going to see a lot more coming into it. But that's what I think is the most exciting.
There are some other examples, and many of our listeners, maybe not quite all, would know that the core technology that runs a bank is better than an abacus, but it's almost as old, right? And so, like, there are some core sort of elements of our economy where if you dig and dig, you know, you find, wow, you know, this system hasn't been updated since fill in the blank, surprisingly long time ago. You know, and it's to some, in a weird way, it's because those things are so elemental to important institutions that everybody was afraid to sort of repair the plane while it was still flying, right? Or God knows, replace it. And so there you are. But it creates this incredible opportunity for innovation, you could say disruption, but improvement, let's just say, from the perspective of all the players in the market. Last thing on change, and then I want to talk a little bit about Odin and Aways. But I mean, you just got off the plane from Bali not that long ago, a month ago, something like that. So maybe with that in mind, what do you think has actually changed about travel?
The nomadic lifestyle for digital nomads and the blending of business, corporate travel, and leisure travel is insane. That is, I think, the fastest growing area of high margin travel. So I'm starting to see personally, and obviously there are tons of reports about this, lots of airlines are either reducing their economy seats and or ripping out their first class seats, and they're expanding their business class seats and drastically expanding their economy plus seats or the premium economy seats. And the reason for this is because there's this new market where people are willing to spend slightly more money to have a more comfortable travel experience. They don't need the flash of first class anymore. Those people tend to be flying private more often, or they're happy with business because business class has gotten so great and it's flatbed, it doesn't really matter. But now you see that the highest margin footprint on an airplane is premium economy, right? That's where they're making their money while flying people. And you just see that by the cabin layouts on all these new planes. And this isn't a US only or European only thing. This is all over. And I saw that on my flights to down to Bali. I flew on China Air, which is a Taiwanese airline. So connected through Taipei. And I flew back on Singapore Air. And that route was, I flew Singapore back to New York direct. So that was the longest commercial flight currently operating at like 19 hours or something. Yeah, it's kind of shocking how these things are starting to change, because, you know, you go back to the 90s, early 2000s, there was economy and it had decent legroom, and then there was business class that was like slightly reclined seats that were wider. That was it. Those are your only options, basically what you see today in domestic flights in the US. But now there's this segmentation, specialization coming in, where you're having premium economy, flat business class, and the days of flying around in apartments in the sky, like Emirates on the A380s, are kind of now starting to go away, right? People aren't flying in A380s anymore. The airlines are not ordering them anymore. They're ordering the Boeing 787s or the, you know, Airbus A350s, because those are like good mid-sized planes that are much more efficient.
To me, I think the virtualization of work is probably up there with the partitioning of the commons and other major, and like, you know, assembly line development and that kind of stuff, interchangeable parts, in terms of its social and cultural impact, not necessarily its economic significance. Interchangeable parts, don't get me wrong, really important. Virtualization of work maybe doesn't seem like, but like from a cultural and even kind of potentially geopolitical perspective, the fact that people's just raw perpetual mobility, especially among elites, has now been almost completely uncorked, has had just an enormous impact. And it's interesting to think about, or to see, you know, to your point, the impact and the way that very adaptive industries like travel and loyalty and all that stuff are sort of adjusting to that. But I love those observations. So speaking of adjusting to that, how are you guys at Odin kind of responding to those changes? Like, what is the, what, you know, from your perspective, what's the play here? What's important about what you're doing in this way?
So one thing that we haven't really touched on is who's lost in this transition. Mm-hmm. So as airlines and hotels move towards dynamic loyalty, and as the programs have been updated and changed so drastically, there have been quite a few losers in this. The mid-level travelers, for sure, the mid-level card spenders as well, but much more importantly, in a much greater scale, it's the banks. Because the banks had these partnerships and agreements with the airlines and hotels. And the airlines and hotels, to be fair, they did not break any clauses or anything in their contracts. They were well within the rights to do this, but they changed the game and nobody was expecting it. The banks were not expecting it. And as a result, they made their programs much less transparent, much more opaque, if you will. And what happens when people don't understand something, they can't see it, they don't understand the price, they give up, they leave. Yeah. So the banks, since this kind of came to fruition, which was not in 21, obviously that happened in 21 is when this change started to happen. People didn't notice until 23 when they started to travel again. And so since 23, cardholder retention for ultra premium and premium credit cards, I'm talking like the Amex Platinums and the Chase Sapphire Reserve cards, has tanked. The retention is at basically all-time lows. And the reason for that is not just this. Obviously, there's a lot more competition in the market, right? Bilt has emerged as a new competitor. Capital One's throwing their hat in the ring aggressively with their Venture and Venture X cards, right? Wells Fargo's now entered. Citi's revamped theirs. So there's a lot more competition than there was before. And you have all these other fintechs that are coming in, like the Built for X and the Built for Y. So competition is a big part, but a large component is the fact that people don't understand how loyalty programs, particularly for airlines and hotels, work anymore. And so they're saying, why am I paying a high annual fee? I can just go get a 2% cash back card for no dollars. It's free. Much simpler. Yep. I don't stress about it. And so that's where we come in. We fix what's currently broken in that. And we do it in a way that drives redemption, gets people to redeem their points and miles. And they've stockpiled all of them, right? They're sitting on hundreds of thousands, if not millions of them, the higher spenders, the higher earners that are out there, right, that hold these premium and ultra-premium cards. By bringing that redemption to the forefront, the consumer, the cardholder, gets to firsthand understand the value of what they're sitting on. They get a free trip or a partially free trip. And they're like, wow, that was awesome. Guess what? They want to do it again. Well, how do they do it again? They have to spend on that card, right? So we're bringing that card to top of wallet. We're increasing the touch points. Because what we've been able to do is we've been able to combine everything that you can do on an Expedia or Booking.com website and everything that you can do on an individual airline or hotel website like Marriott.com or AA.com and smash into one place. So they don't have to go anywhere else to think, plan, search, or book travel. It's an all-in-one solution. It's kind of a perfect mousetrap, if you will, right? So what does this do? Increases points. So the banks can cross-sell those customers on other products, deepen the relationship. Get them another credit card or another financial offering. And what does this do over time? Well, obviously, we're increasing spend, so that's more interchange for the banks. We are increasing their loyalty and cross-selling, bringing that card to top of wallet. We increase retention over time, and then ultimately increase customer lifetime value for each individual cardholder on behalf of the banks. So that is our core focus. We're doing this through our holistic travel portal, which competes with the likes of Expedia or Booking.com, right? So it looks and feels similar. So it's much, much better, I would say, right? So it's a similar product, but unlike Expedia and Booking.com, we care about the financial bottom line for the banks on their cardholders, right? Expedia and Booking.com do not care what card you're using to spend on. They don't care how much revenue is driving to the bank. All they care about is total dollar volume bookings, right? That's all they care about. They don't care if the bank is making money on their cards or which cards are integrated or any of that. It is completely irrelevant to them. For us, that's at our core. And so that's the driving difference.
I should say, to make sure the audience is clear on this, you're doing, and then correct me when I'm the parts of this that are wrong, you're doing basically, you're working with banks and it's a white labeled product, right? So like the customer experience is kind of through that, or is that not what's going on?
Yes, that is. So we offer two versions. So we have a white label where, so for those that may not know, let's pick on Capital One, which I think probably has one of the better products out there because Hopper drives their travel portal, which is, in my mind, leaps and bounds better than Expedia and Booking. So when you go to Capital One Travel, right, you're using your venture card to book travel, that is powered by Hopper. That's not Capital One's travel portal, it's really Hopper's, and they've white labeled it, right? So we are able to offer the exact same thing to any of the major banks, or we can actually offer it to tiny banks, community banks, regional banks, credit unions. entities are way too small for an Expedia or Booking to offer a service to because it just doesn't move the needle. So we're able to cover that spectrum. But if the entities already have travelers, which most of the majors do, we are able to segment and break down our modular tech and just offer APIs. So if, for example, a Chase was to say, hey, we want to layer in live loyalty pricing, live loyalty wallet tracking, we call it our traveler DNA for individuals, or the recommendation system of what to check out with, all those are separate APIs. So we can layer that into their existing travel portals without them having to rip and replace the entire thing.
Great. Well, so having, and you know, having just given us a sense of what you've built, I just have a more subjective question. You've spent a few years building this thing, and I just wonder, like, what was kind of the most exciting thing about building it? And maybe just, and what was the hardest thing about getting this done?
The hardest thing was figuring out where to start, actually. So we're not the first ones to have this idea of building a all-in-one, like, holistic travel portal, right? It's plenty of people have had that idea before us, and plenty of people have failed. I think at least a couple dozen, honestly, have failed to do so. And so starting was the hardest part. We actually started with airlines, airline loyalty, because obviously that's what you think of when you think of travel. You go straight to miles. But after working on that for about 6 months, we realized that we just were not accurate enough in our pricing. And so we had to shelf it. We put it on ice, and then we were like, okay, we're going to hotels. And that's where we got our start, because we were able to get perfect pricing on hotels. And funnily enough, for those that are in the know in the travel space, hotels, if you're booking on dollars, that's where the commissions are. There are no real commissions on flights. So we kind of got lucky with that. For the future, obviously, we weren't selling hotels at the beginning, but that's our bread and butter. And so our core revenue driver for these travel portals is on the hotels end. And that is the best part of our product. And that's the most fleshed out because it's been around the longest. So airlines has been newer. We've gone back now and added airlines, and we've been able to figure that out. Yeah, it was a hard learning curve because nobody had done this before successfully. And we were the first ones to do this. And so it was trial by error over and over and over again. We were just like, will this work? Oh, no. Okay, let's try something else. There's no roadmap, no blueprints. We kind of figured it out for ourselves.
But it sounds like at this point, you're confident enough, you know, that you've seen the path that was taken that didn't work out in a lot of cases. And you're in a place now where, you know, we've been around, you know, doing this long enough, and we're feeling pretty comfortable that this thing works well. Was there an ingredient to the salad that you guys figured out you needed to put in there that everyone else had missed? Was it like that? Or was it just a matter of, you know, tech had changed? Or what do you think was like the thing that has made it possible to make this work?
It's no one thing. It's a combination of all of the above. So tech has gotten way, way better. So we use natural language processing to aggregate our vast amounts of data. So NLP has gotten way more advanced over the last few years. But also, mind you, this tech didn't really need to exist pre-COVID because static award pricing, things were fixed, right? Like it was pretty obvious what the price of things were. So there was no demand for it either pre-COVID. Now, there are other players that are out there that are doing this on a B2C method, right? Selling it directly to consumers. And so they are, you know, substitute competitors to ours in a way. But we, you know, from day one, wanted to focus on the B2B major enterprise financial institutions as our customers and clients. And so, as you said, by starting off with just the hotels, right, we were able to build the hotel API first. And then from there on, everything was built modularly on purpose. So we can splice and dice this for any particular need of any of our customers. And so again, that was trial by fire, but that's gotten to the point where if somebody says, hey, you know, we want a full custom version of XYZ with these components here and these components there, for us, it's not really custom, it's more configuration, which makes it much, much easier to rapidly deploy these to customers. And so yes, to your point, we feel very confident in that. And this is something that, you know, not to knock on the big guys too much, but if you were to go to a Booking or Expedia and say, hey, we want this here, this there, they're like, no, we have one thing, take it or leave it. that's how it works.
A leap of logic, but I guess what I'd say is, you know, the bigger the system is, it's always this way. Like my mention of bank, you know, mainframe software, the bigger you are, the longer you've been around. And those guys at this point have been around a long time. You get into that, don't you? Right. We've all worked for big companies at one time or another in our careers. And it's kind of like, look, this is what it is. And that's the advantage of being small and agile and all that good stuff. So, you know, last question for you, John. What are you most excited about for 2025?
I am most excited to see chatbots actually be useful for travel. I think that we'll start to see that. I have a little inside scoop on that because I know that we're launching our product on them that will be working. But we've seen a lot of advancements from OpenAI and ChatGPT and all the other competitors that are out there. And booking travel with a chatbot is complex. It's messy. There's a lot of data to parse through. Things are very specific. There's no room for interpretation, right? It has to be exactly right. It's been challenging. And we know that the big companies have poured billions of dollars into this, right? This is not something, again, that's novel. We're not the first ones to have this idea. But it opens up an entirely new way of booking. Instead of searching for specific dates in a specific country or a specific city or wherever you're going to, you can now open up to say, hey, I want to go to Europe next summer. Exact dates don't really matter, but I want to be there for at least 7 days, but no more than 15. Has to be on a beach. And, you know, I want somewhere that it only has a, you know, 20% chance of raining any given day for that period. Very specific request. You cannot search that in Expedia, right? Or any other platform. It doesn't work that way. But you can ask a chatbot that, and it can spit out answers if it's built correctly. So once that comes out, I think it's going to change travel pretty drastically.
That's terrific. I think what we're seeing, you know, it's, and this is a pattern that we've seen many, many times, when the electric motor was created 100 plus years ago, it took decades for people to figure out how to use it well. But yeah, transformed manufacturing, things get adopted a lot faster than that now. But the truth is, you know, I think people paid a great deal of attention to, you know, the newest versions of the generative AI, ChatGPT, for a minute. And then, you know, people's attention span kind of wanders. So for the average person, they just haven't been paying attention to it. It takes a while to figure out how to integrate that stuff and also to make it better. But I agree, it's going to be a game changer, and it'll come faster, you know, than people think to some extent. And we all see examples of that every day. So, well, John, this has been a terrific conversation. I love it. Excited about what you guys are doing and looking forward to seeing what's next for you and what you're going to be doing this year. So thanks so much for joining us on Commerce Code.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I had a great time.
Commerce Code is sponsored by Pentadata, the all-in-one financial data API. Whether it is bank account data, credit card transaction data, or credit reports and credit scores, Pentadata has it all in one simple and easy-to-use API. With coverage of over 6,000 banks, over 200 million credit files, and 60 million merchants, you can get all the data you need for your apps at pentadatainc.com. Commerce Code is a bi-weekly podcast bringing you conversations with executives who are leading the way in digital commerce. If you like Commerce Code, your company should join the Digital Commerce Alliance and become part of our mission of advancing trade for good through standard setting, industry networking, conferences, and best practice sharing. Check out our website at www.digcomall.org. On behalf of DCA, have a great week.